Lineup Logic. I'm your host, Mike Alexander. This is The Sweet Spot, talking PGA DFS for the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills. It's going to be a good week. Joining me, as always, Mr. Alex Remezowski. How are we doing, Alex?
Doing pretty good. Just like what I just said to you before we started this, I've been going through numbers and stats and trying to make sense of everything. And there might just come a point where you gotta make some decisions and you gotta go with who you're gonna go with. This field is stacked, and you know, I could spend 3 weeks trying to figure out who I really like up here. And I love it, but it's gonna be difficult, and I think it'll be very fun. I think if you put the work in, if you listen to us, there's money to be won here. I love these weeks.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a great field, like you said. Very, you made the point before we got on. Very reticent of the Masters tournament. All the names are here. It's one of the biggest prizes in golf, the second major of the year. Guys are definitely peaking in their game, a lot of them, you know, so there's plenty to talk about. A couple things before we dive in to the Open. We've got last week, we'll hit that real quick just by saying Dustin Johnson won in impressive fashion. He destroyed the field. Won. Andrew Putnam gave him a run for his money on Saturday, but he pulled away Sunday. And he was 10 strokes ahead of the third place finish with a 19 under. Now, he did hole out from about 170 yards away, which is a 9-iron for DJ, which was just like an exclamation point on, I'm back, I'm ready, and watch out, whoever else.
I mean, the dude's ridiculous. You see, and that wasn't even his only hole out of the week. He had one on Thursday on the first hole, which I believe was his 10th hole. I'm pretty sure about that. And he had the chip in standing in the water. Like, the dude was, and then he had a couple other approach shots that he put to like inches. He's just like incredible. And I love how like this was the one field where it was like DJ was the dude standing out, and he actually did what he should have done, which is like becoming so rare in these little off weeks like that. So it was cool to see. And then Putnam on him. I was on him a little bit last week, but I was really on him the week, I think 2 weeks prior to that, which was cool. But I mean, for a guy that like not very many people even know of, to see him do okay, that was cool. But you weren't stopping DJ last week.
Nope. And you know, he's just gotten stronger, it seems like, in the last month. I mean, he's having a good year anyway. He's one of the top players on the tour. And, you know, the interesting thing is he went back to an old putter two or three tournaments ago. And you know, his typical DJ fashion was just kind of like talking about it. Like, yeah, man, it's a good putter. I roll good with it. I don't know why I didn't use it. It rolls good. I got it out. So I roll him again. And, you know, like, all of a sudden now he went from having a really, you know, good all around game and okay putting to a good all around game, and he's hitting some putts and pretty lethal out there. So
yeah, and to him, I'm sure that means nothing. I tweeted it out. There was the stat flying around a bunch this past weekend saying, if Dustin Johnson wins this tournament, he'll retake number one in the world. Mm-hmm. And my words exactly were, I don't think DJ cares one way or another, but I have a feeling he might do it. And he did just that. And it's funny, he's just an emotionless guy, seemingly. It's like he holes out for a walk-off takedown of this tournament heading into the U.S. Open, and he's just like shrugging his shoulders, like, all right. All right. I'm DJ. I don't really care about anything. I'm just the best, yep, whatever.
Gave a little fist bump and knew that it was on the next week because there's bigger and better fish to fry. But before we jump into all the golfers, why don't you give us a breakdown of the course at Shinnecock Hills, a fairly unique course, some history there. Tell us what we're working with this week.
Yeah, so we got the U.S. Open, second major of the year at Shinnecock Hills in Southampton, New York. It's on Long Island. So we're on Long Island. We're next to the ocean. If you look at anything to do with this course, it looks like a links course. It's relatively flat, kind of like sweeping hills throughout. It's over 7,400 yards now, which is actually quite a big change from the last time we've seen it on tour, which was in 2004. So Shinnecock is the oldest, this is a quote here, oldest incorporated golf club in the U.S. I'm not sure exactly what incorporated golf club means, but it's old. It was formed in 1891, and it held the U.S. Open in 1896, 1986, 1995, and then 2004. So over the span of that long, four U.S. Opens, it's a lot of U.S. Opens, but when we're talking that long a time, I guess, whatever. Yep. It's got a history. People in our generation and people playing this week, some people were there in 2004. Some people were there in 95 and 2004, like Phil Mickelson. So, like I said, similar to what you'd see overseas in, say, Scotland or England, but there's definitely an American kind of aspect here. The last time we saw the course in 2004, it was under 7,000 yards. It was like 69 and change, and now we're talking over 7,400 yards. So we got an additional 500 yards, around 500 yards added onto the course. Yet it's still a par 70. So we're talking long par fours, long par threes, only two par fives. The fairways are a big point of discussion this week. They have historically been pretty narrow fairways and just yards off of the fairway is very, very deep rough fescue where we've talked about it before. If you're hitting in there, you are likely not going to hit the green from there if you're lucky enough to find your ball, which usually you are when you're playing on the PGA Tour. So you want to hit fairways. This is kind of the big debate of the week from what I've taken out of searching around the industry is, are you looking for an accuracy guy or are you looking for the distance guy? I honestly think it's going to be a combo of both because, like I said, it's a long course. It's a par 70. So the only way you're going to be able to score is with distance. There's some forced carries out there where you're literally hitting over trouble off the tee. But then again, if you're just bombing the ball and missing fairways, you're going to find yourself in some real trouble. So I guess other notable points here, we got POA greens again on the East Coast this time. So yeah, it might be a little different from West Coast POA, but POA is POA, if you ask me. It's going to be a little different than your average Bermuda or bentgrass green. So there's going to be a little more variation on the green. There are definitely some players out there that are POA putters, some of these West Coast guys that have lived with it their whole life, whether they were competing in college out there, what have you. I have heard that these fairways are going to be smaller. So I'm personally going to be kind of targeting accuracy with an added bonus of distance here. Tiger Woods was quoted saying it's more like a British Open than a U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. You can run the ball up to the green when it gets super dry out there. Another big point, weather. Weather, which I haven't looked at in about a day now, but the last time I saw it was pretty much sunny with winds anywhere from like 8 or 9 miles per hour up to like 14, 15, which when you get up to that 14, 15, it can make a big difference, yeah, especially when it's blowing overnight and there's no rain. The course is going to dry out, which is what we've seen here in the past. And when the greens start changing color and getting rock hard, it's going to make things extremely difficult. The greens are going to be hard to hold. Putting is going to change. Everything around the greens is going to change. Imagine trying to hit from foot-long fescue onto a concrete-like green. Nearly impossible. So there's a wide range of variables of what we could actually end up seeing. So I think it's something we got to stay close to. Do you have any take on this, or have you gotten any more up-to-date information than me?
A couple interesting quotes I'd seen out of Ted Scott, Bubba Watson's caddy. He had said, I think it was Monday, he said his first walk around Shinnecock, and he says this with confidence, long hitters will have the advantage, and one of them will hoist the trophy. And then, I guess that was Sunday. And then yesterday, Monday, he also said that the course is starting to firm up and greens and fairways getting a little tighter. Long hitters have the advantage, but medium hitters with accuracy can compete as well. So some interesting things from a caddy there.
And that's Sunday and Monday?
Yeah. And like you said, the forecast has maybe a little bit of rain overnight Wednesday, so I'd expect a fairly dry course. It's only going to probably get harder as the week goes.
If it's dry and fast out there now, and we're not expecting any rain, there's really only one thing you can expect.
Yeah. You get a little thunderstorm there overnight Wednesday. It could play a little soft Thursday morning. That could possibly be an angle to look. Somebody who has an early tee time Thursday morning might be the best conditions.
I'm looking right now, 90% chance of precipitation. I'm just looking on like Google right now, so I'm not getting anything crazy accurate, but Wednesday evening and tonight, you could see some rain, which you're right, could definitely soften some things up going into Thursday morning. That would be interesting. I think something you're going to have to keep up on. And then it's lower winds throughout the night, and then the afternoon, it looks like, is when the wind kicks up. And if that persists overnight, then who knows, we might be looking at the crazy fast course by Friday once again.
Yeah, I think this course is definitely going to have some teeth. They don't want to repeat of last year where Brooks Koepka demolished Aaron Hills and ran away with things. So I think the winning score is probably going to be barely below par if it's windy.
That's the thing about the U.S. Open is you never know. Like we've seen years that you have the entire field complaining about one thing or another.
Yeah.
Chambers Bay when Spieth won in 2015, the greens were like insane. I just remember watching it like when Spieth was coming down to it, and it was the par five, I want to say 17, and he hit a 5-wood or a 3-wood into the green, and it was like over 250, and like the ball hits the ground and it just runs and runs and runs and runs. Yep. And runs like 50 yards onto the green, up to this curved back end of the green, loops right back around, down like 12 feet from the hole, and of course he drains the putt.
Yep.
Like it's just like an insane thing to watch, but then you have half the field just going at the USGA, like, what are these greens? How do you expect us to play on this? This is so ridiculous. But, you know, they're all playing the same course.
Yeah.
If they're bumpy greens, they're bumpy greens. Like, you're going to get breaks or you're not going to get breaks. So I don't think you'll see that. But then I think, to your point, when a course play is extremely easy 1 year, and then 2 years before that, it was, like, as hard as it gets and almost just to a ridiculous point, I think they're probably shooting for someplace in the middle there.
Yeah. And I think distance is going to be a big factor this week. But like you said, it's going to take everything. You know, a links course, just because you can hit it long doesn't mean you can overpower the course. You want to be approaching greens, especially depending on pin location, from a certain place in the fairway. You know, if you're approaching a green from the wrong angle, or you're bringing certain hazards into play, you know, there's really no water hazards in play here this week, but a lot of bunkers, and like runoffs, things like that, you know, you might hit the green and you're going to be chipping back onto it. So
yeah, probably out of like a dirt sand mixture at right. that too. Right. Like I've seen videos of the rough, like it goes from like fairway to like shorter rough to taller rough to fescue, and like that middle rough is actually like insanely intimidating just looking at a quick video of it. Like it's nothing people are going to want to be hitting out of. No. You don't, these guys don't practice this every single day. And a lot of these holes are, you look off the tee box, it's like just dead straight. You see this little fairway and then trouble left and trouble right. Mm-hmm. So like all I can keep in my mind is like, you got to be in those fairways. Distance is going to help, but you've got to be in those fairways.
Right. So let's jump in at the top. We've got quite the star-studded field in the 10-plus range here. Some very big names. Anybody, we hit DJ pretty well. I think he's one of the favorites for good reason. Any of these other big names that you want to point out to start?
Yeah, I mean, it's a major week. So, like, what we're looking at is the best names in golf here. So what you can do and what I've been trying to do is really drill down into what we find important this week. And what I have been focusing on the most is a combination of gaining fairways. So hitting fairways, good drives. So on Fantasy National, good drives gained. It's a great stat that is pretty much accuracy. And you're gaining strokes by hitting the fairway and not getting yourself into trouble off the tee. With a little bit of driving distance, greens in regulation gained over the field, and then bogeys avoided and strokes gained par four. That's like kind of what I'm trying to keep it to here. I think I've looked at kind of link style play, and then I've also looked at putting on POA. But to me right now, hitting fairways, scoring on par fours, hitting greens in regulation, and then avoiding bogeys are some of my biggest things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one person that stands out to me when I say all of this, but we're going to talk about him in a minute. So up here at the top, just like I wrote yesterday in the article on lineuplogicdfs.com, Justin Rose right now is my favorite. And that is very close to Dustin Johnson, who, like you said, I just don't think you can even argue with him now because he's got the distance and he is just like pinpointing everything he does right now. So if he is – and he doesn't strike me as a guy who's going to go home and like as much as of like a degenerate crazy guy as some people think Dustin Johnson is, I think he knows that – I'm heading into the U.S. Open right now. Yeah. Like, let's keep this going. He's not like going home and blowing some lines.
Yeah, I think he's coming out of those days, at least when he's in season.
It truly appears that way. I really think like this guy has been nearly unstoppable. And the only other names that I can put in that grouping with him right now in terms of just like being so consistent week after week are Justin Rose and maybe Jason Day. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at a field like this, you have to narrow it down the best you can. And to me, the guys that stand out right now are Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, and Justin Rose.
Yep. Yeah. You know, Rosie is my top cash game option. He's going to be popular. But with this kind of field, you don't really have to obsess about ownership. You can play who you want to play. You're going to be diversified, you know, no matter what. And, you know, he came off the win at the Fort Worth and then did really well at the Memorial as well. So he's in a prime spot. He came up playing on courses like this, obviously, being from England. And then you said Jason Day. I think he's getting his fair amount of attention, but I don't know why. I just feel like Jason Day never really gets his due when he's being brought up in the conversation with DJ and Rory and Spieth. You know, he just kind of feels like the little brother to those guys. And man, he's having such a year. So the one thing that I really am going to key in on Jason Day is if it's windy, he's a strong player in the wind. Australia has a lot of links style courses. So it's something he's familiar with, comfortable with, this kind of, you know, sandy kind of course. Like that's Australian golf. So especially if it gets windy, I'm going to up my Jason Day percentage.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think he gets strangely overlooked sometimes. And like, I think DraftKings pricing sometimes favors course history, and on a week like this, it would be tournament history. So like, who's performed well at prior US Opens, which you see DJ prior to 2017 in 14, 15, and 16, he was T4, T2, and then he won it in 2016 at Oakmont. So you can see why he's the top priced option. In addition to just what he's been doing, he's coming off a win last week. And then Justin Thomas, he's got two solid years in the U.S. Open. But then Jason Day, 2013 to 2016, T2, T4, T9, T8. He's been up there just consistently. And then since January, he won the Farmers. Then he's got a second, 22nd, 20th, won the Wells Fargo, 5th, and then 44th at the Memorial. And that was just like a subpar weekend for him. I just think Jason Day can pretty much adapt to the course that he's playing on. He's shown us he's capable of winning at so many different types of courses. Like Jason Day, you can't like pin him to one kind of golf course. And I, like you said, he can hit in the wind. I really like him here at 10-5. I think people are either going to be going up for the DJ or Justin Thomas, or down for the magnitude of options right below him. So
Justin Thomas, another good bet this week if he's your guy, got the complete game. I do worry a little bit with him, you know, with this challenging of a course. He can be his own worst enemy at times. So that could come into play a little bit there, where he gets himself kind of in the wrong mindset.
Yeah, I agree. But there's really no arguing with, like, you. Just Justin Thomas is clearly just another one of those guys that's a step above everybody else. Like, even when you start looking at like Jon Rahm down, you see like poor performances and missed cuts out of some of these guys. Justin Thomas is, even if he's sneaking by to make the cut, he's going to like show up in the top 20 somehow.
He's going to make a move.
So,
and you know, I mean, if it's on draft.com, like I have JT ranked number 2 after DJ on draft.com, because you don't have to worry about any kind of ownership or salary. The $11,000 price tag on Justin Thomas is a little hard to swallow. And then you got Rory there at 11.5. He's not really getting much talk this week. And with that 11.5 price tag, I feel like his ownership is going to be really depressed. Because why not pay 11.7 for DJ, like coming off of his performance and, you know, the giant question marks that come with Rory, the putting, you know, he's come back this year strong, but outside of, you know, last fall and the beginning of this year, was in a really bad spot golf wise. So you can, I actually have him in my pivot section on the cheat sheet, which is shocking to put Rory there.
Yeah, I mean, but if you're considering a U.S. Open and everything that comes with it, I completely, completely see how he is 100% a pivot off of either Dustin Johnson or Justin Thomas. The only thing I really don't like about him here is the price tag on DraftKings. Like, 11.5 is a lot to ask for someone with the question marks that you don't see so much in Dustin Johnson and Jason Day and Justin Rose, and even like Ricky Fowler has question marks all the time, but I would still almost rather take him, especially at 10-2, over Rory at 11-5. But there's no saying that Rory isn't going to go and take this home, or at least be in contention on Sunday. Like, he's playing well. We all know that. Yeah. 2 weeks ago at the BMW PGA Championship, which there was actually a pretty decent field there in over in Europe. He came in second, minus 15. And so he's in form, and he knows the course. He knows the U.S. Open. He knows what it takes. And I don't think there's any counting him out. I just think price-wise, I would personally rather be moving down to someone else. But I agree. He's a pivot for sure.
And then yeah, you got Jordan Spieth to consider. Everything's kind of gone wrong for him this year. And he's still very expensive, but his ownership is still going to be in the you know, mid to low teens because he's got that brand recognition. You have any interest in Jordan this week?
So the one thing that makes me like Jordan Spieth is the fact that people are getting extremely scared of him. The fact that he's performed well at the U.S. Open for some time now. And the one thing that really, really stands out to me is that he won in 2015 at Chambers Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Chambers Bay and Oakmont are the two that are kind of standing out to me right now. Oakmont was in 2016. These are the two U.S. Opens I'm talking about for anyone who isn't quite clear on that. So 2016 was Oakmont, 2015 Chambers. Both of these courses have POA greens. So that's something that I think is pretty interesting. Like 2017, Erin Hills was bank grass. And then we had like 13, Marion was bank grass again. And you see a jump after 13 to these longer courses. And Chambers Bay was over 7,500 yards. So you got the distance there. And then you got the POA greens. And all in all, a similar style of golf, what it's going to take to win this. We know that we like Jordan on a links-style course.
Yep.
It's just his recent form has been, like, disgusting putting and just struggling all around. It's just, right. Like, we're all waiting for him to snap back into it, and it's just a matter of, like, when that's going to happen. It scares me, but...
And that's been through the Texas swing, which should have been, you know, prime Jordan Spieth season. Like, that he should have... You know, nailed all of those tournaments and really had a lot of letdowns.
Yeah, like when we were talking Trinity Forest, we're like looking at these Lynx players and then Texas players and Wynn players, and it was like everything was talking Jordan Spieth, oh, Texas, on top of all those other things, and he just like didn't come through. And so, I mean, I'm leaning towards just like staying off of him, but I think there is a case to be made. And I think it would be interesting to, if you're setting multiple lineups, to throw him in a couple on that off chance he wins. Like it's going to,
I think he's going to give you the most bang for your buck as far as a guy who's low ownership and a shot to be a real good shot to win. You know, there's honestly probably 15, 20 guys that have a shot to win this at a course like this. In this magnitude, but you know, he's definitely at the top despite all of his recent struggles. All right, there's a couple names in the nines here. They're good ones. Who do you like the most out of this little contingent of John Rahm, Tiger, and Brooks?
I mean, see, I've always gone with the John Rahm being such a comparison to Dustin Johnson. And I honestly think I'm just going to have to stray away from that a little bit here. And as much as I want to say Tiger, I just can't trust his driver, because if suddenly he's putting something in the fairway, like it's going to be something else that goes wrong. I think he's going to make it to the weekend. Like, I'd say there's a 80% chance he makes it to the weekend. And then that's usually when he starts really kicking it into gear. So it's like Thursday has been ugly. Friday has been, let's make the cut. And he makes the cut. And then Saturday is great. And then Sunday is kind of a disappointment. We're waiting for that to turn around. You would think Shinnecock Hills, who knows? Maybe this is where he feels like he's like back in his prime here, and he's going to go do his thing. But I can't trust his game quite yet at this course, especially what we saw him do very recently. It's like it's the numbers show you, like, he's just not hitting fairways, and he's going to be in a lot of trouble if he's not in the fairways. And I can only imagine what kind of toll his grip it and rip it attitude is going to take on his back trying to smash it out of this fescue. So that pretty much brings me to Brooks Koepka, who is the defending champion at the Open and has four fantastic years in a row here. And, like, honestly, like, this dude is full-fledged on a comeback here. I know last week he kind of slowed down and was somewhat of a disappointment for what he was priced at on DraftKings, at least. But he was right there, and he was playing good golf, especially Thursday, Friday. Yep. And I think this is probably what he's preparing for and has been preparing for since his injury last year. So Brooks would be my choice out of those three.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Obviously, the Open history is great for Brooks. He seems back. I do have some interest in Jon Rahm. I think he's such a competitor. And what he did at the Masters, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Like, he doesn't profile great for that course. And despite that, he finished fourth. He just, if you know, he gets the bit in his mouth and he runs. So I could see him doing something on Saturday, giving himself a chance Sunday. And for 9,500, you're getting that same kind of upside as a guy like, you know, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, who are a bit more than him.
Yeah. I mean, I could see him being in it for sure. I just think he is another one of those guys that's kind of like waiting on the big break here to win a tournament mm-hmm. like this. And he's shown us that he's capable of winning in a decent field. I just think I'm feeling this is going to be quite an emotional battle for 4 days here. And some of these more experienced guys, actually something I threw out in the article was I don't remember if it's Shinnecock or the US Open. I think it's Shinnecock. Every modern Shinnecock winner has been over 35 years old, which is interesting.
Definitely.
These experienced guys who can deal with their emotions and not let themselves, like you said with Spieth, be their own, or Justin Thomas, be their own worst enemy. When something goes wrong, you kind of need to just keep it moving, because it's probably happening to a lot of other people out there.
Yeah, play every hole is a brand new hole. All right, the eights. Some great names in here. This is a spot where I'm going to definitely play two, three, maybe four guys if I can fit them in the majority of my lineups.
Yeah, lineups could be built in this range.
You mentioned earlier there was somebody later on you wanted to talk about. I'm going to take a guess and say that it was Henrik Stenson.
Yes. I was like, I know I mentioned the Euro Tour, but he actually was not one of the names I was thinking of on the Euro Tour. But in terms of the stats that I'm really, really trying to zero in, this has been kind of refined over the past couple days. I've started off here and there and work down to what I really think is important this week. And when you're talking fairways gained, I'm looking over a somewhat large sample size here, because I don't want to focus too much in on just very recent play, because then you're pretty much getting Dustin Johnson out of last week and the winners from the past couple weeks. So if you bring it out a little longer, you're seeing what people are really kind of playing with coming into this week. And I think when you encounter a course like this, you kind of get dragged back to the type of golfer that you actually are. Henrik Stenson, he is leading in fairways, top five in strokes gained par four, top two bogeys avoided, leading greens in regulation, and I actually have strokes gained short game here because I wanted to put in some sort of short game here, which he is better than most of the field in. I'll put it there.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because he's my pick to win it this week.
And I love that. I actually have a future on Henrik Stenson, and he was one of the few guys that it actually paid to put a future on, which I was happy to see in a way. At his current odds, though, I was still kind of wanting to double down on him a little bit. But there's so much to like about Henrik Stenson, but the one thing that scares me week in and week out is he's such a par guy, which is like strokes gained par four. Yeah, he's not bogeying them. Maybe he can birdie some par fours here and there. And bogeys avoided. He's avoiding a bogey every single hole by getting a par. And it's just like, when are we going to get those birdies? Because when you're following his shot tracker on a Thursday, Friday, and you see seven pars in a row, you're like, come on. When are you going to do something?
Vanilla. And he's definitely vanilla. But like we said, if this course is playing to par, you know, you're not seeing these double digit underscores. He's got a shot to win with that style of game. You know, that's why he's a good links player.
Exactly. And that's when you get your fantasy points out of him. So whether you're betting on him or whether you're starting him in fantasy on DraftKings at 8,800, which is like a phenomenal price. And I would say like, we're just begging for him to be chalk here, but at the same time,
you know,
like,
his projections surrounded again. I mean, he's being talked about, but not to the level that like you and I are feeling him. And his projections are like low teens. So at that level, like I'm all about it. I've been firing off some draft.com contests, and you can get him with your second pick every single time. Sometimes your third pick. Like his projection on there is pretty modest. And it's the same thing. People are going for names, you know, guys like Tiger and Sergio. Well, maybe not Sergio, Phil, Bubba.
I think people are going to be liking Hideki this week too, which is personally, I would 1,000% rather be dropping down to Henry.
You know, I don't think there's much on Hideki either. I think he's going to be even lower. He may be single digit ownership. People hate Hideki right now. Like he let so many people down this year with the injury and the poor play, but very recently he's been okay. And what tournament was he pretty good in? The Memorial, I guess it was. You know, he really liked the Memorial, or he does really like the Memorial and the setup there. And he tied for 13th, so not outrageous, but you know, he's another guy who's a good links player. He's got that disciplined game that could definitely get him top 10 this week.
Yeah. I mean, he's coming off of a T13 at the Memorial and T16 at Byron Nelson. So like, I think he is coming back into form, and he has also had very good US Open history. He used to be like the consistency guy for me, and then that just like totally went away. And you telling me he's going to be in single digits is actually pretty enticing here, but looking at all the stats that I just named off, like he is just not even close to touching Henrik Stenson in any single one of them. So if I'm going off my process here and I'm trying to stick with what I do here, it's going to be Henrik over Hideki 10 times out of 10, personally.
All right, then you got Sergio, no trust in him at the moment. Obviously, there's like the course fits him. He's a links player, good in the wind. If he weren't missing cuts at the moment, he'd be pretty popular. So he probably trolls all of us and goes out and wins the US Open.
Like if he wins the US Open here, I mean, anyone who puts Sergio Garcia in their lineup is
my troll bets to win it are Sergio and Brant Snedeker, because they've both got the right profile, the right game, and they're playing like dog crap at the moment.
Yes. Yeah. No, I think that's actually such a good point. Like Brant Snedeker, exact profile. The guy you would just like, if we went back a year in time and we were looking at stats to who should perform well on this course, it's Brant Snedeker. And that 100% agree with that. So anyway, yeah. So in this upper eight, my favorites right now are Henrik, and I actually really love Phil too. Phil is like a constant. I'm so happy when I play him and he does well, and then I get so pissed off when I play him and he doesn't do well. And it's just so hard to actually predict when he's going to do well and when he's not going to do well, but he is finally showing a little something his past two outings with the T13 and the T12. And his U.S. Open history is just like one for the books. He's had six runner-up finishes, like I was talking about earlier in our chat. Six runner-up finishes. He has blown. He has just completely blown up on Sunday. He, like I also said earlier on this podcast, he's been at Shinnecock the past two outings for the U.S. Open here, which was basically 10 and 20 years ago. Over both of those, 2004 and 1995, he finished fourth and second. And I like vividly remember being a kid watching Phil Mickelson that Sunday pull out a driver on 16 or 17, I believe it was, and just ripping it so far left mm-hmm. and doubling it. And it was just like an epic meltdown. Yeah. And it was so hard to watch. And I was probably 12 years old, 13 years old, whatever I was. And it was so yep. sad. But he could play this course, and he could play the U.S. Open, and he's coming mm-hmm. back into form. He's got a win on the season. He's only 8,600. He's got something to play for. He wants the career Grand Slam. And there's just so much riding on this that Phil is the kind of guy that I don't think is going to – who knows when his last chance to do this is going to be. Right. And I just, like, I'm pulling for him. I'm going to have to have yeah, him.
This is probably the most competitive he's going to be in a U.S. Open ever again. Now that,
but at the same time, people have probably said that the past 3, 4, 5 years.
It's true. And, you know, he can wear his long sleeve shirt. The temperatures are going to be in the 70s, so you don't have to worry about that.
That's what I'm talking about. I want a U.S. Open in that shirt.
What about Captain America, Patrick Reed? Go back to back majors here?
I'm so, like, Patrick Reed biased because of what he did for me in the Masters, but he's being talked about so little right
His
now.
His ownership is going to be single digits again. Like, come on, people.
Yeah.
Play Patrick Reed.
And he's continued. He's been continuing. I know. Exactly. Like, I'm going to have him. I'm hoping to actually be a little overweight on him, which apparently won't take much. If you're setting 10 lineups, put him in 3 yeah. and you're going to be largely overweight on him. Put him in 2 or 3 and you're, like, if he wins, you're going to see what it brings to you. And this is going to be a tough tournament. I don't think we've mentioned this, actually. Top 60 in ties. We've got over 150 players in this field, and it's top 60 in ties, not top 70 in ties. So making cuts is big.
Yeah.
And if you have the winner, and if you have the winner of someone in the 8,000s that's not a super high-owned guy, like, it's going to do a lot.
Honestly,
for
you can fire off 4 guys from this tier in your lineup, and then 2 from the mid to upper 7s, and it's going to be a great lineup.
I agree. There's so many options up here in the first, like, 20 guys in this field here that you see pricing wise, and, like, there's a lot of things that can happen here. But I really think you can. There's so many different lineups you can make, even disregarding the top, like, 5, 6, 7 guys here, let alone, like, what the rest of the field has to offer right here. So, like we said, this price range is going to be very, very important. Patrick Reed, Phil Mickelson, Henrik Stenson, 3 guys that I really, really yep. do like.
And then you got Brendan Grace. He's a nice cash game option. He's going to be a little popular towards the end of this tier, but good open history. Yeah, kind of a safe bet. Doesn't miss many cuts. What do you think on DeChambeau? Does he carry his success into this one?
I truly do want to see him succeed these days, which is, like, very strange because I used to just hate the guy's guts. But it's like he's a freaking weird dude, and I kind of find it funny and interesting. And he's a good golfer, and he seems to be pretty consistent. But coming into a tournament like this, man, like the names here and like the proven fact that experience and maturity and age all like bring to your ability to perform here makes me want to not think about him.
8,300 is, but it's 8,300 is tough for him. If he was, you know, 76, 77, I'd have some higher interest, but like you said, yeah, it's to be put right there with Sergio, Phil, Bubba Watson, that's a little above his head price wise.
Yeah, see, the thing is, he's coming off of a win, and that's why he's priced there. Which, like, coming off of a win and being 8,300, normally it's like, oh hell yeah, play Bryson DeChambeau. He's fresh off a win. He's looking great. He's feeling great. He's 8,300. But you look at this field and you look at the options below him, below 7,500, and it's like, that's where Bryson DeChambeau belongs. Like, he belongs at like 7,500 with Tony Finau and Xander Schauffele and just above Brant Snedeker. Like, those are some of the names that you would group him in there with. And 8,300, you're very right, in this field is asking a bit much. But like, honestly, what he did at the Masters, like, he was right there, and he came back for like a decent finish there. And I think he's, I don't think he's phased by like a tough course or a strong field. And
if he makes the cut, he could do.
He piques my interest, I gotta say. Yeah, it's gonna be about those first two.
I'm gonna play some Bubba Watson. He's gonna be single digits. People have been ignoring him all year, and you see what he did at the Masters. Like, nobody had any idea that he finished where he finished. If you asked just a random golf fan, where did Bubba Watson finish at the Masters? They'd say, you know, middle of the pack, like 25th, 30th, something like that. He was tied for fifth. So, you know, it's I could see the exact same thing happening. Like, he might not win it, but I think he's going to be up there. And then you have any interest in the British boys down here at the bottom, Tommy Fleetwood and Paul Casey?
All right, so Tommy Fleetwood, yes, 100%. I'm back on him this week, full on. He's another guy that I have a future on that I actually doubled down on this week. I'm fully back into Tommy Fleetwood here. I just, like, he's from England. He knows this type of course, these type of conditions. Mm-hmm. I think he should be able to thrive here. He can hit a very long golf ball. If he can keep it straight and make some putts, he's going to be right up there. He's had success at a couple U.S. Opens in the past. He came in T27th in 2015 at Chambers, which is the one that I'm really kind of looking at here. Aaron Hills, he came fourth, a lone fourth there. So, like, I really, really like Tommy Fleetwood. The price is actually, like, so good at 8,100.
That's actually the problem for me. They're both going to be super chalky. I think their ownership's going to break 20%. I like both guys' profile, but at a course, in a tournament.
What's killing me about Paul Casey? Paul Casey, 8,000. Yes, I can agree. He's chalk. Yeah. He's got to be chalk, right? He's Paul Casey at 8,000. I see him, his odds to win betting wise are so ridiculously. It's like, it's making me think people know something about Paul Casey that I don't know, at 50-1, at 48-1, at 45-1, whatever it is. And it's like, what's going on here? But I guess, like, two things I can think of here. Is you're looking at Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, John, like, the field. It's the field putting him there. But he is Paul Casey. He's an English guy who's done okay at the U.S. Open. He's been in very good form. But the one thing I hear no talk about is 2-3 weeks ago when he withdrew from the Players' Championship with a back injury. And I just can't find anything. Like, I see him, like, posting on social media saying he's excited this and, like, loves the course and played here, played there, and he did okay overseas. He was excited for the BMW, whatever, that people thought that he might not quite be ready for the BMW PGA Championship in at the Wentworth Club, which he said he really liked, and then he finished T20 there. So it seems like he's fine, but what his odds are just like, it just seems like the sharps like know that he's like not. I don't know. He doesn't have any U.S. Open history in the past 5 years. That's I'm looking at the wrong name now. Yeah, 26 last year. It's like he's never done great here, but I don't know. He's still Paul Casey.
He's fine cash game wise for the price, but yeah, I don't see him winning something that's this hard to achieve. I think unless he runs away with it on Saturday, he's not going to close it out.
Yeah. I mean, I like him. My initial thought was like, hell yeah, Paul Casey makes so much sense here, but the back thing with a couple other factors playing in here makes me want to take some caution. And with the names around him, I would much rather pay 100 more and take Tommy Fleetwood. So especially knowing ownership, I think if ownership is garnered anywhere, it's probably going to be Paul Casey over Tommy Fleetwood. So yeah, it's just me.
Yeah, it's game theory for me. Any time in a tournament this hard, you can lop off a fifth of your competition. You got to take it, unless it's a guy like DJ. But there's the salary constraint with DJ. So these guys, even though they're great prices, cash game's fine for me. I've done fairly well this year by using the game theory. It's hurt me in a few spots, but. I'm going to let the course do the work for me.
Yep. I can't disagree with that.
Okay. Then the sevens. So this is where, this is where you got to make your dough, because the last like few weeks I've had such good top end guys. I picked some winners. I had Jason Day when he won, somebody else as a winner, and I'm just getting killed by the guys I'm picking in the sevens. So lead me to water here, Mr. Remezowski.
Yeah, so, I mean, it has been a tough couple weeks for choosing some value plays here. Like, we've seen some fields with some guys who do not deserve to be priced over 7,000, priced far above 7,000. And we are back to a full field where things are getting a little interesting again. Starting off, one of my favorite options here, it's tough, but everything is kind of coming together at this point. Louis Oosthuizen at 7,800, great U.S. Open history, mm-hmm. great recent play. He just makes a lot of sense to me here. A guy right above him, Alexander Norin, your guy. Another guy that I put a future on. I think I put a future on four guys. Norin and Fleetwood were the two main ones there, because of their odds were so enticing. But Norin has missed three cuts in a row mm-hmm. at the U.S. Open, which is a little off-putting, but we know he's a new man this year. But Oosthuizen is where mm-hmm. I'm really going to be starting here.
Yeah, he's interesting because the South Africans fared really well here in 2004. Different course, but there was definitely a connection.
Yeah, and like if we're looking at even his short game is actually pretty good over a longer time period. Strokes gained par four, his greens in regulation, like if he's going to be able to hit fairways, he's going to be doing just fine.
Agreed. I think and the next guy on the list, Mark Leishman, is Australians and South Africans this week. I don't know why, I just got a feeling about them. They're good with this course. They're used to it. They've excelled on it in their past, most likely.
Yep. Yeah, I think.
And Leishman's ownership is not high for a guy who is definitely popped in a couple spots, the Masters being one of them. He was a leader at different points in the Masters. He was the early leader through Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, Leishman is very interesting to me. The last time I started Mark Leishman, I put him in like, I was very, very underweight on him. and that was at the AT&T Byron Nelson. Yeah, and he finished second. And I think a lot of people were on him that week. So it was kind of like one of those weeks where if you didn't have Mark Leishman, you were hurting. And I only had him in a few lines, and it was a few other people. That was when the cut was moving back and forth, 100 to 200, 100 to 200. And I ended up getting hurt badly by that. And I wish I played Mark Leishman more. He followed that up with a T62 at the Memorial, but he's had a couple weeks off. And we were talking about him before that week in Texas, saying that he is a Lynx guy, but I remember we brought up the weather. We were like, it's going to be so hot. He's a big dude. Who knows? He's probably out of shape. I don't know. He's way overpriced this week, and I think that's why I was underweight on him. This, however, could really work out well for him, and he's done some good things at the U.S. Open, like you said. So I think he's another very interesting option.
Yep.
And that's a pretty good price for Mark Leishman too, $7,800.
So. Yeah, great price.
Yeah,
great
price. I think that's someone I'll definitely be thinking about. You said ownership wise, you don't expect Mark Leishman to garner that much ownership.
No, looks like single digits. Oh. He's just kind of lost down here in this tier of names that you can play Norin, Adam Scott, Oosthuizen, Webb Simpson, Schwartzel, Molinari, Kuchar. Like it's it's one of those kind of things where if Leishman were 8,500, his ownership would probably be double what it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, that's probably true.
It's a weird reverse kind of logic.
Yeah. That's a very good point. So the next name down for me that I have here that I put here just because I wanted to make a point, and he's actually priced right below Mark Leishman, Patrick Cantlay. I'm not doing it this week. I know he kind of fits into that like DFS interesting play that a lot of people like to go with. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I would expect him to get a little bit of ownership at 7,700, but the dude, I don't trust him to put a ball in the fairway at all. And I just see him getting into some big trouble this week. I could be very wrong with that, but I am sticking to it here, and I'm going to be full fade on him. I can't take another week of sweating Patrick Cantlay, and I'm not going to put myself through
it. He hurt me at the Fort Worth.
Yeah, I mean, but then he came right back and finished fourth at the Memorial, which was like, that was a stab in the back to me. It hurt. I think maybe I'm a little salty about it, and that's why I'm feeling this way, but just watching him hit the ball all around, I think maybe the Memorial, he just had a better chance to scramble from some of these not so great shots off the tee. Let me see where he shows up. 36 rounds, fairways gain. Let's look up Cantlay. Searched in the wrong spot. I have a feeling it's not going to be very good. 54th in the field, fairways gained, and pretty much the only, and then he's 16th in the field in greens and regulation gained. So it's like, that's almost saying like, I don't have scrambling actually in what I'm looking at right now. That's pretty much saying he's a scrambler. He's going to miss the fairway and then he's going to hit the green. And when you're hitting it into foot tall rough, it might be tough to actually go ahead and hit that green. His putting's coming around. So Patrick Cantlay, fade in my book. And that brings me to four guys who I have a similar amount of interest in all of them. Let me pose this question to you. Choose your top two out of Webb Simpson, Matt Kuchar, Keegan Bradley, Tony Finau.
Kuchar's at the top. He's got the right game for it, Lynx, et cetera. Finau, like the numbers like, but I don't know. I mean, it's tough with him because he had such a good Masters and he shouldn't, have done anything there. But I've got the same kind of feeling like the distance isn't going to help him enough. you know, and he just came off of a cut. So I'm going to pass on him. Webb's a tough one. You know, I feel like when you expect Webb to do well, that's when he, you know, really hurts you. But, you know, if, would I rather play Webb or Keegan Bradley at the same price? I'd have to say Webb. So I guess Kuchar and Webb.
Yeah. It was funny. Like last weekend, I was on Keegan and then he withdrew and I had him in the cheat sheet and it was too late to even do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And I was actually pretty pissed when I found out because I'm one, especially in these off weeks, that I like to start building my lineups pretty late. I like to put in all the work, look at everything I could possibly look at before going ahead and actually putting lineups together. And Keegan,
yeah, same here.
Keegan was hot on my list there, and then I was like, "Shit, he's not even playing." So that made things a little interesting. But with that said, he knew he was in the U.S. Open, and he's clearly thinking ahead to it. He has spurred some interest after a couple decent finishes, T7 at the Players, which was good to see, and then T23rd at the Memorial, and those are both big field tournaments there. So I think Keegan is like strangely setting up for something, which means he must be draining some putts, which is pretty much what's been holding him back for like years now. So Keegan piques my interest, but 7,600 is definitely a bit much. Finau, I agree with you. Like, his distance is compelling, but the fact that he doesn't hit very many fairways is a little scary. And right now I'm leaning towards...
And he putts like
that. Yeah, and that too. So really right now I'm leaning towards the guys that you know can be consistent and hit the ball straight. And, like, we've seen Webb Simpson do so many good things lately. And he's had good U.S. Open history. And then Matt Kuchar is just like, this is his tournament. This is his type of course. This is everything. I could see him being chalky because it's a Lynx course, and then you want Spieth and Kuchar and whatever. But so out of those four, I would take Webb and Kuchar in terms of being safe. And I think you need to be safe this week.
Yeah, Kuchar, I love in cash games, and his ownership's not looking too bad, even for tournament plays. You know, he's the 31st priced golfer, and I think he's going to give you a top 15. So that's excellent value.
That would be fantastic value. I'd say if he makes anybody 76 and below, if they make the cut and do a little something on the weekend, you're going to be pretty happy with that, especially if you can pair him with a winner in a top five, or just a winner, or even a couple top 10s, like... You're going to be looking good, especially if you have 6 of 6. And if Kuchar is in the top 15, top 20, top 10, whatever, he's going to pay his price here. So Webb and Kuchar, very interested in. I think Webb comes with a little more risk. Matt Kuchar, not so much. And then Keegan and Finau are actually, I'd say Keegan is more interesting to me, and Finau is more towards fade for me.
Yeah, they're both carrying some ownership, and I'm okay fading them for sure.
Yeah. So, anyone else you like in the mid sevens, the mid to low sevens?
So here's what I'm gonna do with Ian Poulter, since I hate the guy. I'm gonna put him in some lineups. If he does well, it's a win. If he does poorly, I get to hate him even more, so it's a win.
Yeah, that's a classic gambler's attitude of like, I'll bet the enemy. So if I win, I'm happy. But if my team wins, then I'm also happy, and it's a win-win. But it is interesting.
But yeah, in all seriousness, for the disdain I have for him, he's playing great this year. He's a Lynx golfer, coming off of a great couple of tournaments overseas on the Euro Tour. You know, he was playing great last time we saw him at the Players and the RBC before that. You know, he could revert to the guy he was at the beginning of the year and absolutely missed the cut, but that's why you're paying $7,300 for him.
Yeah, it's a great price for him. And like I mentioned in the article kind of for you there, he's always had the beef with the USGA. It's like he honestly like yells at them on social media and they like yell back at him on social. Like it's honestly hilarious to look at and to read and to watch and just to be like on the sidelines for. But this could end up in two ways, and it could be the USGA sticking it to Ian Poulter or Ian Poulter sticking it to the USGA.
Yeah.
It's going to turn out one of the two ways. It'll be very interesting to see, but I think he does stand out at 7,300 one way or another.
And then Emiliano Grillo, 7,100. He was a late addition to the field. Young guy, so that gives you some pause. I don't think he's going to win the thing, but for 7,100, you know, a top 20 is definitely doable for him. We got you know, Grillo chalk week out of the way at the Memorial. He gave you a 23rd, so he even hurt some people there, you know, for the ownership he was at. So I think between the late addition and people maybe having a little bit of a bad memory of him, you'll get him at decent ownership. In the mid-teens there.
And he's going to hit fairways.
Cash games must play.
He's going to be in the fairway, and I feel like it's going to be such a huge advantage. It's crazy, but I agree with you. I think he's at 7,100. If he's not chalk, man, he's going to be in my lineups.
Yeah.
I hate to say it because it's going against what I'm saying with I want names and I want experience, but he's like kind of the exception right now.
But like his ownership's going to probably be 15%, and it should be 20. So you can take that.
Yep. Just pair him with someone that you're getting on a little bit of an edge on. Pair him with Patrick Reed.
Right. Yeah. You got Rafa Cabrera-Bello, a nice kind of safe golfer, 7,200. He's another guy that's a really low price.
Yeah.
Just kind of getting lost at the bottom.
Yeah.
Anybody else for you in the sevens?
There are three Europeans that I just want to shout out real quick that we haven't mentioned, and that's Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Shane Lowry, and Rafa Cabrera-Bello, Shane Lowry, and who was I just about to say? I don't even know. I just lost it. Maybe it was just two. It must have been two. It's those two.
Maybe it was Grillo.
We talked about
it. I like RCB. Tyrrell Hatton. Is that who else?
I don't trust him. He's a hothead. Yeah, he's gonna like snap a club and get pissed off and miss the cut and tweet about it.
Right.
It's probably a good Twitter follow for the week, though. He's always a good Twitter follow, but I'm sure it'll be interesting this week.
I don't trust Lowry. I know he's got the open angle, the U.S. Open angle, and the Lynx style, but, man, he's been bad this year.
He's been bad, but at the same time, like, he's made his last four cuts, and he's, like, making some improvements here, and his U.S. Open finishes are just good. Good and good and good, but I do agree with you. I've shouted him out a lot, and really it's like kind of based off 2015 and 2016 every single time, and he hasn't done that much to show us anything otherwise, so it's a little scary. But 7,300 Jimmy Walker is also piquing my interest. I would be remiss if I didn't.
Yeah, I like him in cash games, Jimmy Walker.
Yeah.
He can return value. Let me ask you, Chesson Hadley. He seems to pop stat wise, and only 7K. Are you going there with Hadley this weekend?
You know, it's kind of like Zach Johnson, Grillo, Hadley, 71 to 7,000. On your average week, I would be very interested in all of them. I'd probably say Zach Johnson is I'm most interested in him because he can play in these big tournaments. He's kind of fits that bill for experience. He has proven himself to me. Chesson Hadley is on the Emiliano Grillo wavelength there. Only Griot has been one step ahead of him in terms of everything we're looking for at this course, which is why I would probably fade Chesson Hadley. He's too inconsistent for me. I'm not fully on board with him yet. We know he can win. He's done it a couple times very close together and then shown us he's kind of went through a quiet stretch and then came right back at us and people started loving him again. So I think if I'm gaining any sort of leg up on people by not playing him at 7,000, I think there's plenty of options around him. Zach Johnson, Griot, Chez Reavy at 29. Steve Stricker is statting out so well, but he scares me too.
Yeah, I mean, if the back holds up, like, this is an excellent course for his style of play. Played a lot lately, so you can either take that as the back is good or he's taxing it and he could be in trouble.
It scares me, but it scares me every week, and it seems to not scare other people, which is weird to me.
He's probably the highest owned from 7 and below.
All right, then gain a leg up and hope he withdraws after a round. Bam.
Right. I'll build a lineup with him because I am a Stricker fan. Two names down here that I want to point out for cash games, Brendan Steele and Charles Howell III. You know, they're kind of grinders. They're going to probably make the cut. And if you're going to play a guy like DJ, you're going to need to put one of these guys into your lineup.
Yeah, yeah. I would go towards Charles Howell. I've been on him lately. He just keeps making cuts, and I feel like he's just a confident player and a confident guy. And I prefer him here. And he actually played here in 2004 also. And he finished T36 with 75, 70, 68, 83 on Sunday. Yikes. So, hey, without that 83, damn, he could have won the tournament for all I'm saying. But it was 500 yards shorter, so I wouldn't expect huge things out of him. But, I mean, that's a good price for Charles Howell here. He kind of fits the bill.
Right. All right, so let's talk ownership briefly. You know, we said earlier, it's such a – it's an immense field. You can go anywhere you want, pretty much. There's a few guys that are both popular and cheap that I think that's going to put their ownership into the 20s, and that's going to be a problem. DJ, with coming off the win, is the most talked about guy. Some British names up there, Rosie, Fleetwood, Paul Casey, you know, I think Rosie, you're okay. He's such a solid, good golfer. You can play him chalky, but Fleetwood and Casey, like I said, I'm not interested if they're going to be in the 20s. Spieth is right there in the top five, despite everything. Now, that could be some negative talk as well, and you're kind of, you know, the names you have to talk about are Tiger and Spieth if you're going to have any kind of golf programming. So there's that as well, but... trying to see if there's any other, you know, most of the other guys are you know, top dollar guys being talked about.
Yeah, like Harmon? Do you have any ownership on Harmon? He's cheap.
Harmon, what's his price?
7,000, I want to say. 6,900. He's down there.
There he is, 7,200. Zero, like literally zero ownership. Like, nobody's talking about Brian.
That's very interesting to me. I mean, I know I've heard his name out there, but I mean, he hasn't been exactly impressive, but he can hit the ball a long way, and he came in second in the U.S. Open last year. Yeah. So, hey.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's had an up and down year, but he's showed it at times. So
on the POA too, West Coast Swing is when he was performing.
Right. But yeah, that's about all the notable ownership I have. Yeah, outside of those guys, you're probably okay to play anyone. And then you want to throw a couple darts here, maybe pick an American and an Englishman.
American, Asian, and European. I was actually looking at props earlier, and it was percentages for an American, an Asian, and a European. And I thought that was so interesting, and I was like, damn, this is actually – let me get you the odds that were presented to me real quick.
That's an interesting prop.
Yeah, yeah, and it was actually the only prop.
There's not that many Asians in the field.
Two win props. We got USA minus 175, non-USA minus 150. And then you got Golf PG top Asian is the name of this category. And to win, we got Hideki at minus 125. Ben on at plus 300, Kiradak, Alpha Barn Rat at plus 400, Siwoo Kim, Hao Tong Lee, Satoshi Kodiari, and then some. Oh, Sharma is in there, and a few others that I'm not really aware of. And then we got an Australian, which is obviously headlined by Jason Day at minus 150, Mark Leishman plus 150, Adam Scott plus 200. Then you got Cam Smith, Matt Jones, Aaron Baddeley. And then Europeans start with Rory McIlroy at plus 200, Justin Rose at plus 300, John Rahm at plus 400, Henrik Stenson at plus 500. That's actually very interesting to me. So
let's do this. Let's just go all five continents. Give me an American, a European player, an Asian player, an Australian, and an African, because we got South Africa there.
Okay. All right. I like this. I can do this.
All right. Let's start with Europe, because I put Henrik Stenson out there earlier on as my pick to win it. So he's obviously my European player.
All right. European. I really like Henrik Stenson too. You're supposed to say John Rahm.
I do like Rahm.
I'll say John Rahm for you.
Okay. I can dig it. All right, let's head over to Asia, and I'm going to take another easy one here with Hideki Matsuyama. All right. Obviously the best odds out of the Asians.
All right, well, actually, honestly, someone who I did want to mention here was Ben An, who...
Okay.
Has been doing some pretty good stuff lately. And what is his price? I was like just gonna fit him in there. Yeah, so he has played in the past three US Opens, cut, T23, cut, and then prior to that, so he was in the playoff at the Memorial, and that was pretty wild because I had money on him and I was pretty excited for that. I think he would have put some of my lineups over the edge, but he has to perform at the Memorial. You're going to be hitting fairways and you're going to be making birdies. So, I mean, he's doing what you got to do. And at that price, can't really complain with him. And if you already took Hideki here, he's my guy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving down to Australia. I'll go Mark Leishman, the big man in the cool weather.
Yeah, I really do. I really do like Mark Leishman here, but I got to take Jason Day. I'm 100% going to be on Jason Day this week. And I just, Cam Smith, no thank you. That guy is just in another world.
He's been struggling.
Adam Scott has a new caddy this week. You told me he's a new putting stroke or new putter. What's going on with him?
I heard he didn't do quite as well last week with the long putter, so he's thinking of switching back, and like just any indecision there, just that just turns me off, man. It's you got to be confident. You got to switching putters coming into this course, and the U.S. Open is recipe for disaster with a guy like him. But
oh yeah, big time. But it is interesting. He stats out well in terms of. Yeah,
he's got great iron play.
Yeah, the iron, hitting fairways and then the irons is just like, Adam Scott should be very, very good, but he's just not, and it's the putter rule. You just can't use the stupid putter anymore. So deal with it. Learn something.
All right, then working backwards, my South African is going to be Brendan Grace. I'll leave you, Louis. he's a safe bet, but like the safe bets this weekend have a shot to be top five. Got guys like Grace, Kuchar. You know, just not by avoiding mistakes, you might just suddenly find yourself on that leaderboard.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's those two kind of when you're looking at. And they're always in a similar price range too, which is very funny. But
yeah,
I like who says
and Charles always right there with them.
That yeah, that's very true too. And Charles is another guy who I believe, yeah, he's had very good U.S. Open history. But Oosthuizen is like really coming into form on us here at Fort Worth Memorial. And then he's had like very good U.S. Open history over the past 4 years. So Louis would be my choice there.
All right. Then an American or a North American. So Adam Hadwin, other Canadians are in play here. I'll let you, I'll yield the floor to you. Who do you like?
Oh, did we do it? Did we, are we going to do, England or does that count in, European?
Yeah, why not? Well, we've got a veritable United Nations going. We might as well bring Great Britain into the mix.
It's not a continent. All right. Well, North American, that's tough, but I don't want to be too cliche here. I'll say, I gotta go with Dustin Johnson. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta take a big name.
It's not a dart. It's not a dart at all. But right. Come on.
I'll say Brooks Koepka if we're gonna take the big guns.
Yeah, that was my answer.
He's got the U.S. Open history and he's bounced back. But yeah, DJ's odds-on favorite.
Okay, wait. I take back Dustin Johnson. I say Patrick Reed.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
That's a dart. That's more of a dart.
Yeah, and low ownership. All right, then give me an Englishman.
Englishman, Justin Rose. Rosie. I'm being boring.
You know, I feel like I can't say Casey or Tommy Fleetwood after I threw some dirt on him earlier. So the only other guy that I mention is Ian Poulter. As much as it pains me to say, I'll throw his name into the hat as my Englishman.
Just imagine the reaction to see this guy win this week. I could, yeah. Oh man, I almost want to see it. Like I want to see Bryson DeChambeau or Ian Poulter win, which is just so crazy.
Yeah, that would be a win to behold.
My enemies are becoming the guys I'm rooting for.
Right. All right. Well, that's what we got time for tonight, guys. If you aren't subscribing to the PGA tier on Patreon, go over to patreon.com/lineuplogic. Sign up, get the cheat sheet. You can always hit us in Slack and on Twitter. I'm at @Roto_Wan, WAN. Alex is at Donald Remington. Alex, enjoy the U.S. Open. Have a good weekend. I hope you have the same success you did Masters Week this week.
I hope so too, and I hope the same for everyone else out there. I'm going heavy this week. No regrets. Gonna love it. Gonna love every moment of it, and I'll be watching it whether I'm in it or not on Sunday because it's gonna be a great tournament.
If you win the Million Maker, you got to get a no regrets tattoo somewhere on your body.
I will do that. I will tattoo whoever's name got me the most fantasy points in my lineup somewhere on my body. I guess people can vote on it.
Patrick Reed, comma, no regrets.
Oh, that would be great.
All right, guys. Good luck this week. Signing off.